today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
They did such a great job of exposing people to all this great music that was not so easy to find.
Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in. My name is Patrick Foster. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to this final episode of our Paisley Underground series. Thank you very much, Paul Hayden. All respect and love to you for your determination to get this one done and your passion and all your help. So certainly appreciate that very much. I've been quite enjoying getting back into the Paisley Underground. It's really been a treat. So thank you, Paul. And I want to announce that we may indeed have a prologue. Wait, is a prologue first or an epilogue? An epilogue, whatever the one that comes at the end is, to this episode, because Craig Rosen, one of our listeners and noted music journalist, basically grew up during the time of the Paisley Underground, and he saw all these bands. And so Paul and I are going to try to get together with Craig and record him and his thoughts and memories to make a nice little epilogue or prologue to this series. So we will try to do that. Okay, with that said, I think there's plenty of explanation in the episode as we wrap everything up, so no need for me to continue babbling. We will turn it over to the TDK machine, the final tape we have recorded. 15 cassettes, of course, took up all this tape. I had to edit them all down into five episodes. Quite a Herculean task. Sleeves rolled up, ashtray overflowing with Luckies, and we got the job done. Let's hit play and wrap up the Paisley Underground series. I think there were like three bands. When you think of them now, I think you look at them like these three bands, you know, had kind of a little bit of a country influence. And that's not something we've really talked about with, you know, the four records that we covered. Country didn't really come into it. Yet California has such a strong history, be it Bakersfield or, you know, LA or all kinds of different places of country music. And, you know, the three bands that I would highlight, and I think we agree on this, Paul, are Green on Red, the Long Riders, and True West. They were all around this time. They were all sort of semi-connected to this scene. Now, Green on Red, when they began, they put out an EP and an album. We're pretty 60s. I mean, the organ was a huge part of it. You know, they had a singer in Dan Stewart who had a voice that was, you know, kind of, I don't know, it was almost like the Seeds, you know, or something off of Nuggets like that, right? Very identifiable, yeah.
Man, you never knew. He asked you out.
And then when friend of the podcast, Chuck Prophet, joined Green on Red, suddenly, you know, they discovered this whole tradition of LA country and California country and put that in to their group and made records like Gas, Food, and Lodging and No Free Lunch. And all of a sudden they were covering Willie Nelson. Where did this come from? Always found them to be a very, very cool band. Always, always liked them a lot. The Long Riders are kind of in that same boat. They, you know, Sid Griffin, I think, was from Kentucky or somewhere in the Midwest and moved out to L.A. And they were a much more, I don't know, galloping kind of a, you know, they merged country and punk a little bit more than Green on Red did, where Green on Red was kind of a psychedelic country blend. And then there's the band True West, which were, you know, almost the outsiders of the outsiders in a way. But yet, you know, we're on the scene. They have a spirit of early Pink Floyd. I remember they did a great cover of Lucifer Sam on one of their early EPs. And you know, combined a little bit of elements of a lot of the Paisley Underground bands and, you know, maybe the ripest for rediscovery. I can't say I've listened to a True West record in many, many, many years, although I know I've got a couple over there on the shelf.
Yeah.
I think the country part is a really good observation, because you're right. I didn't talk about it. I didn't really hear it in any of them. And at the time when I was into these bands, I wasn't yet open to country music. I wasn't ready for it. So in hindsight, you look at kind of the, yeah, at that time you had Rank and File, who were, they were called country punk.
Yeah.
That's like the worst. I mean, they were not.
It's
punk.
Yeah, no. I mean,
the Dills were punk. The Rank and File were not. But they, you know, they were getting their toe deep into country. And the other bands, I mean, Long Riders, I mean, they definitely were a big influence on the Americana scene. That
absolutely.
Uncle Tupelo, are they kind of the starting point of that? So and True West really did almost like a 180. Man, that first EP is like blistering punk psychedelia. You've got that ripping cover of Lucifer Sam, you've got some other stuff that's just wild. And then the next release is very toned down, and definitely you hear that country influence. So, not major bands in the sense of, I don't think they ever made that true great album, but worthy of conversation, because they did help and they stuck it out. And they, again, I mean, how unpopular could it be to be a country, you know, punk band in the mid to late 80s. I mean,
yeah,
I just wasn't, people were not open to that from what I recall. I mean, so kudos to them for sticking to their guns and you know, keeping that scene going and influence all these other guys who took the baton, so to speak, and did their own thing with it. So, a good bridge. All those bands were a good bridge to, you know, other things. And again, maybe they just didn't have the publicity behind them, you know. I do remember Green on Red. I remember Gravity Talks. At the time, if you recall, back then you kind of relied on a lot of different sources to find music. And I think REM was really, really good at talking about other bands. Like, you got to listen to these guys. And I probably heard of them from them and bought that album. And then I just kind of, that was it for them. I didn't really pay much attention until later when I got the Gas, Food, Lodging and those records. So, you know, you can only be ready for so much. And
that's very true. Yeah.
It would be nice to have the brain to, you know, process all these bands when you're in your formative years, but not for me. Some bands take a little time. So that's the way it goes. As long as you get to them eventually, it's all.
Yeah. And that's why we're talking about them now. So
one thing that's really interesting about this whole Paisley Underground scene, and I don't know, Paul, if there's another where this kind of thing happened. I mean, I know there have been a lot of scenes in music where there's been a definitive compilation album, you know, where there's one song from every band that got put out and it's like, oh, this is the scene, you know. But talk about this Rainy Day record a little bit, because I think it's very unique.
It is. And this is one of those situations where, from what I recall, David Roback either had a studio or had access to a studio. He wanted to test the equipment. So he calls up Susanna Hoffs. He calls up Kendra Smith. He calls up Michael Curcio, Will Glenn, and says, hey, can you come down to the studio? We're just going to have some fun with some old 60s songs, and I can get a feel for what this recording studio is like.
Yeah.
So they all go in different times, and they record covers of Velvet Underground, Buffalo Springfield, The Who, Hendrix, Big Star, and
yeah,
it's really, really good, because again, I think it's just they didn't think they were doing anything that was going to be permanent. And from what I understand, Roback decided to put it out without the consent of any of the musicians. Said, all right, this looks good. I'm going to call it Rainy Day, and I'm going to put it out on my own label. And the musicians weren't too happy about it because they wanted to, I guess they felt like their performance was good, but could have been better if they'd had a chance to maybe rehearse or do multiple takes. So personally, I think it's just great the way it is. And again, this is one that really opened my eyes to, I don't know I'm trying to think of when I got into the Velvet Underground. I think it was when they did the reissues on the vinyl in that mid-80s. This might have been right before that. I was aware of them. But again, where are you going to get them? I mean, you're not going
right.
to hear them on local radio. So, and they weren't easy to find. And anyway, you know, they do these really great versions, particularly the Kendra and Susanna, that I'll Be Your Mirror, Flying on the Ground Is Wrong. Just great versions.
Is my world not falling down? I'm in pieces on the ground, and my eyes aren't open, and I'm standing on my knees. But if crying and holding on and flying on the ground is wrong, then I'm sorry to let you down. I wish I could have met you in a place where we both belong. But if crying and holding on and flying on the ground is wrong, then I'm sorry to let you down.
Now, that reminds me, Paul, of like a, you know, like something Phil Spector or Brian Wilson would do. Just like, let's, you know, come over here and try to, you know, work this out. So that's in the spirit of, you know, those classic L.A. recording studios and artists. Very beautiful.
It came out, and I remember I had it, and I don't have it anymore, which is really disappointing because it's worth a lot of money these days. It was never really put into mass distribution. There might have been two pressings of the album, one pressing of the CD, and then David Roback, from what I understand, was a bit difficult with allowing these things to be reissued. And then there's the the fact that they're all covers. I mean, the licensing costs now are sure prohibitive. So
yes.
The copy I have in my collection is actually a CDR. I was back in the day bidding a copy on eBay and lost out. And I emailed the seller. I said, hey, can you burn me a copy? I'll send you $10. He says, sure.
Oh, wow. So that's cool.
Sounds good. This is before putting all your music on your computer. So it was nice to have this copy. But again, I think it speaks to the talent of all the people, all the musicians who can go in there and knock out a song like Bola Cost and I'll Keep It With Mine, which at the time I had never heard of this Dylan song. Like, Dylan wrote this? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, an obscure Dylan song, you know, before all the bootleg series came out. You didn't know what a lot of this stuff was.
So again, they did such a great job of exposing, you know, people to all this great music that was not so easy to find. So definitely a public service from the Paisley Underground, and definitely you can hear. Maybe when Roback was doing this, maybe that's what gave him the idea for Opal and Mazzy Star, just hearing, you know, a female voice in a minimal background and the power of that expression. So, yeah, that's a really good Paisley adjacent record to track down. I don't even know if you can stream it. I guess YouTube may have it, but...
Yeah, probably YouTube, I would say, is your best bet. And like you said, because of licensing probably more than anything else. But, you know, I was thinking about this today. It's such a precursor in a way to what Matthew Sweet did with Susanna Hoffs, right? They did the cover albums, Under the Covers. And, you know, it's got a lot of the same vibes. So if you like those records, definitely seek out The Rainy Day, I think. But it doesn't end there, because there's actually a reunion album. This blows my mind. I didn't even know about this until we started preparing for this podcast. This is crazy. Tell us about this, Paul.
So in 2012... So in 2011, I had mentioned that the 3 o'clock reunited at Coachella. In 2012, I don't remember the reasoning behind it. Maybe it was a benefit. But someone, now might have been Steve Wynn, started floating the idea of everybody getting back together and doing a show. Not a tour, but just a show. And that led to, why don't we put out an album? We'll call it 3x4. And each band of the big, these are the big four I'm talking about, will record one song by the other band. So you've got the Bangles covering Rain Parade, Dream Syndicate, 3 o'clock.
And love so, it.
And just a great idea, and kind of a nice way to tie in this kind of reunion that, you know, it wasn't really well publicized. And in your defense,
no.
Patrick, I didn't find out about it until much later. There was no real buzz about it. It happened in LA for, I think, two shows, and that was it. Didn't lead to, I mean, I think the 3 o'clock did eventually play some more shows, but it didn't last long. Same with the Bangles, and the other two were playing anyway, so that didn't really matter.
Yeah.
But just a great idea, and just to hear, you know, everyone's take on the other songs, and they are quite different, I will say. I was probably most impressed with the Rain Parade material because I wasn't as familiar with it. And I'm like, why have I not heard of this? And I'm like, well, I have heard of it. It's one of the 3,000 CDs that I haven't quite got to. You know how it is. Enough time. Too much music, not enough time. And mostly it's the older material. I mean, almost all of it is from... I think 84 might be the newest Hero Takes a Fall, which Steve Wynn and Dream Syndicate. So you can tell he's got a good sense of humor. He's going to cover the
song written about him. It's perfect.
Exposed when crimes were brought to the light of day. Won't be feeling sorry, sorry, sorry on the judgment day. Wasn't it me who said there'll be a price to pay? And I won't feel sad at all when the hero takes a fall. When the hero takes a fall. Your mother told you stories. Your substitute with girls who tell you more. Suddenly your sacrifice are chanting at your door. We're seeing through you now. I've seen it all before. And I won't feel sad at all when the hero takes a fall. When the hero takes a fall.
Like you said, what a wonderful way to kind of, you know, tie it all together, yet show, I think, not to pat ourselves on the back here, Paul, but the way we have been talking about the endurance, you know, the timelessness of these big four records and artists and this whole scene, you know, sprung from punk, but was much more broad than that. And for the bands to be able to get together, however X many years later, and release this on Yep Rock, which is a super cool label, shows, I think, the power of all these records and the worthwhileness, if that's a word, of talking about the Paisley Underground and just discussing all this stuff. It's just great. I mean, it has to be pretty good if you still want to go back and feel like you could play it years later. So,
yeah, and you realize that the stuff that may have kind of sounded dated, like As Real is kind of a bit of a trippy song on Baroque Hoedown, but on this 3x4, it's just like, it's like a classic. I mean, it's just,
yeah,
everything just sounds fabulous. So. A testament to their strengths as musicians and testament to their friendship and community, which is what we're about, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's a great way to put it. Suburbs Fest, Catalina Island. That's what's happening next. So we'll see if that works out. Totally amazing. Paul, I got to thank you so much for your preparation, your passion, and just a pleasure to always speak to you about music. You know, like you said early on when we were talking about the Days of Wine and Roses, now I want to go listen to all these records, all four of them, right now. Because they're
not... That was my job. I want to be someone, anyone.
You've... A great tribute to a great musical movement. And we've already come up with a few songs to induct into the Perfect Pop Hall of Fame. So what else do you need?
I appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts with you, Patrick. And I'm always happy to talk to people who want to listen to me, because usually when I start talking about this stuff, the person's eyes start glazing over and it's like, okay, they don't really want to talk about this. And I know there are people out there that do. So it makes me happy.
You're among friends. Yeah. When your family starts leaving the room awkwardly, then you know you've gone on too long. Well, that's a good note to end it on. Paul, I'll put you on the spot. What song should we play out with on this epic trip through the Paisley Underground?
I think let's do I Look Around by Rain Parade, because I think that's the one that maybe people aren't as familiar with. And it's a good indication of what they were all about. And, you know, less obvious than something from the Bangles or whatever.
I Look Around. Perfect. There it is, folks. It's I Look Around from the Rain Parade. And we will close our series. Paul, thank you so much for your time, for your passion, for your efforts. And I think we've done a service to our listenership here. And let's all discover and, I don't know, bask in the Paisley Underground.
Thanks again for the opportunity, Patrick. I appreciate it.
Of course. Anytime. I will get you on the hook for the next series shortly. Well, folks, thank you very much. I am Patrick Foster, and with me has been...
Paul Hayden.
Thank you, Paul. We will talk to you guys tomorrow. Sleeves rolled up, ashtray overflowing with Luckies.